trying to bring you a story that is just unfolding.
We need to eliminate all uncertainty before we take any action. It's certainly not a risk analysis they apply to other areas where they take dramatic action, you know, the Iraq war being a glaring case in point.
The United States and China obviously have differences, but look at the things we have in common. We need a stable world to allow...
That's a big question.
Well, we got time.
If you don't know how to fix it, stop breaking it.
If we act boldly, we can make significant progress in reversing the potential
damage. We need to take some responsibility.
Cap and trade, you think that's really the answer?
Yeah, it is.
Short and sweet.
When you start cutting your energy bill, you start giving your city opportunity.
Hello and welcome to another fresh edition of EcoTalk. Very excited to bring you today's program. You'll hear why in just a moment. On today's EcoTalk, Sports Illustrated, Newsweek, Vanity Fair, Fortune, Time Magazine, Body and Soul, Elle, even Car and Mechanic, all doing green issues for this April. Earth Day has never seen so much attention on it in terms of our embattled environment, and none too soon. We're thrilled to see them making the Earth part of their beat, and given the demographics of all the issues involved, they're sure to bring more Americans into the fold. But not every page is completely green. Witness one Richard Lindzen, noted global warming skeptic, and his Newsweek editorial that basically tries to debunk the other 80 or so pages of that magazine. Climate Institute chief scientist Dr. Michael McCracken will be joining us. He's going to address Lindzen point by point before Lindzen gets even more press space. Then we'll take you into the comfy confines of Philadelphia's White Dog Cafe. Have you heard about it? We do talk a lot here about Walmart, Home Depot, what the big corporations, GE, are doing to try to green themselves, but we really love what the small businesses have been doing quietly all along. Pleased to welcome back to the program Dr. Michael McCracken, who I had the honor to meet during my stint at Gore U back in Nashville in January when I was one of the 1,000 volunteers, and they're just today wrapping up the last of those training sessions. He was our resident expert, clarifying and confirming and sometimes, oh, a few cases, not questioning Al Gore, but clarifying, I guess, is the best way to put it. Mostly he was just there to answer everybody's questions. And so we wanted to have him back to see what you think. First of all, let's start with the IPCC report, because part two came out last week, and we haven't had a chance to talk to you about that yet. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Betsy. I mean, the IPCC report that came out, I think, did an excellent job of trying to put together the key impacts that are going to happen from the climate changes that were discussed in the first report. And what they suggest is that things are happening faster and more intensely than had been thought in the past.
I think a key point of that IPCC report, and it went down to the wire, is that there's a lot of debate to reach consensus among scientists and experts, so that what comes out of there in no way can be seen as, you know, anything less than that. I mean, that's by definition what the UN report on climate change is, correct?
Well, that's right. It's an attempt for the scientists to get a summary of what's out there in the literature, in the peer-reviewed literature, and then present it in a way that can be understood by the governments. They shouldn't be able to tilt the science, but they should be able to ask for clarity in how it's explained.
And one of the interesting points is also that it does not include, it looks at 5 years of research, I understand, since the last one was issued, and it does not include the last 6 months. And things are, as you said, happening more rapidly than anyone thought, so it might not even include everything.
Well, that's
that we're
right.
Seeing.
I mean, basically things happen at the cutting edge, and things sort of go back and forth a little bit, and they want to wait until they've settled down a little bit, until there's a time that's been available to, in case there's a rebuttal or there's some problem with it. So they have a little interval between what's published and when they publish.
Okay, well, there's a little group of people who are still what I call the deniosaurs. One of them, of course, is Michael Crichton. One of them is James Inhofe. And the third musketeer is Richard Lindzen. And he has written an opinion piece in this green issue of Newsweek called Global Warming Fears Overblown. Tell us a little bit about who he is and why you think he's taking this position over and over and over again, challenging what the majority of scientists are putting out.
Well, first of all, he's a professor at MIT. He's well-respected for the research he's done in some areas of atmospheric sciences. He was elected to the National Academy of Sciences when he was fairly young, early in his career. So he's a respected scientist. He insists, I think, in looking at what others are saying, that they say it with very, very high confidence. I guess the sense of the rest of us is he doesn't impose that same standard on himself.
A little hypocritical, you're saying.
Well, yeah, I think as I read that piece, it's only about 7 or 8 paragraphs. I sort of noted down about a dozen things that I thought were quite misleading or deceptive. His concluding statement, where he sort of takes a swipe at Vice President Gore, it says, the conclusion of the late climate scientist Roger Revelle, Al Gore's supposed mentor, is worth pondering. The evidence for global warming thus far doesn't warrant any action unless it is justifiable on grounds that have nothing to do with climate. Well, Roger Revelle died in 1991, and so all the changes that have occurred since 1990, and it's been very dramatic, all of the warmest years basically on record, and all of the starting of the melting of the ice caps, none of that has happened. So he's quoting a statement that's just way out of context and trying to make a point, but I think it's just a very misleading one.
And he starts out by saying there is no compelling evidence that the warming trend we have seen will amount to anything close to catastrophe. He's saying it's a natural cyclical thing.
Well, yeah, but when he says compelling evidence, there he's asking for very high certainty, and then it isn't high certainty that there's change occurring. That we've gotten, it's high certainty for catastrophe. Well, all of us are trying to hope that we don't get to catastrophe.
We only hope that they're right.
The Framework Convention has basically said, let's not go to dangerous, which is probably less than catastrophe. So he's saying, that this high certainty about going to catastrophe is just, I think, a very deceptive statement. It's a way that, okay, maybe it's strictly true, but it's sort of meaningless in the context of where we are and what we understand and what's happening and the pace we're on for more happening.
He goes on to say, in many other respects, the ill effects of warming are overblown. Sea levels, for example, have been increasing since the end of the last ice age. What do you say to that?
Well, it's true that sea level from about 20,000 years ago to 6,000 years ago, as the big ice sheets were melting, came up, but it's been fairly constant for thousands of years. I mean, if you go and look at the Roman baths that were put in sort of at sea level, they're still right at about sea level or something. Things have started to climb up. We're seeing a higher rate of change in the 1990s than we were earlier, and we're now starting to see Greenland and West Antarctica starting to lose ice mass. Well, yeah, if it was cold enough so that they weren't losing ice mass, sea level stays sort of the same. If you start warming, things start rising. It's sort of like he's looking back and not allowing for any consideration of what could happen in the future.
And, those who say these things also tend to say Greenland was green at one point. The Vikings settled there. What do you say to that, the fact that it was not covered in ice at some point in the history?
Well, there's been a little bit of shifting around of the ice, and so you do get some fluctuations in sea level. And the North Atlantic was at one time a little bit warmer. It's not at all clear that it was that was a global effect. If you look back at these various times, there have been shifting locations of the warm periods over the centuries, and so you get a little bit warmer, but then it got cold, and now it's getting much, much warmer. And you're finding conditions up there that the Inuits, for example, who've been there for thousands of years, are basically saying is totally unprecedented. They don't even have words for some of the animals, the birds that are showing up in their region. Their language has no words for that. It has all kinds of words for the ice and snow and those conditions, but it has no words for some of these species, which is a pretty clear indication that it just hasn't happened either earlier this century or longer ago.
Okay, last example. This is a quote again from Richard Lindzen. Many of the most alarming studies rely on long-range predictions using inherently untrustworthy climate models, similar to those that cannot accurately forecast the weather a week from now.
Well, Larry's mixing a couple of things up. Trying to forecast, when you forecast the weather, you're talking about the exact sort of state of thing that's going to happen on a particular day, whether we'll have thunderstorms in a particular day in the afternoon. That's hard to do because of the random nature of the weather, the chaotic nature of the weather. But when you're looking at these longer-term conditions, the issue of sort of that summer is warmer than winter and other things, when you look at these things that are forced by external conditions, and in the case we're talking about by changes in the composition of the atmosphere, that we have pretty clear indications of. That's a different kind of thing. It's not trying to predict the weather in 2100, the exact weather on a particular day, but the general warmth of the summers of the 2090s. On that, we think the models are doing fairly well. They do quite well going through the 20th century. He at one point says we don't understand the 20th century. I don't know where he's been missing all the discussions that's been going on the last 7 years and the scientific advances. But, I mean, it's just a misleading statement to compare weather prediction and long-term climate change projections.
I agree, and we're out of time. Thank you so much for your comments. Always insightful, Dr. Michael McCracken, one of the world's experts for a very long time on climate change. Thanks for your perspective.
You're welcome.
Back right after these messages with the owner of the White Dog Cafe. If you haven't heard about it, you'll be truly inspired. Stay with us.